You're listening to a podcast from the Media Motel. Coming up this week in episode 290, Information Burnout. Is it time to stop watching the news? And with every Premier League footballer moving to China, we ask if there's any room for loyalty in sport. And are we reaching the end of the era of a night out at the movies? Oh, I hope not. Let's make it not so. That's all coming right up after XTC and the Ballad of Peter Pumpkinhead.
Well, the lack of worldwide acclaim for the works of XTC remains one of the great mysteries of our age. From the 1992 album Nonesuch, and released as a single without troubling the charts, the magnificent XTC and the Ballad of Peter Pumpkinhead.
As ever, it's the general public that's wrong rather than XTC, I think.
Absolutely. The world is just out of step with
very
XTC.
Much so.
Yeah. Welcome to the podcast from the Parish Council. It's episode 290. I'm Terence Stackham, but more importantly, here's the heavenly Juliet Harris.
Oh, you're too kind. Thank you. Hello, everybody.
Jules, I'm finding this a difficult week. Mr. Trump is due to be sworn in tomorrow as we record
this.
Yes,
that is a thing.
My smoke alarm won't stop bleeping.
I did wonder what that was in the background.
Can you hear it?
I heard it, yeah.
It'll turn up intermittently. I'm actually going to wrench it off the ceiling tomorrow. I've tried. It says, insert screwdriver here, prise off cover and slide. Right. And after... I spent half an hour at it. A friend of mine yesterday was here and tried for about 10 minutes to wrench it off.
Why you should never accept an invitation to dinner at Terence's house, because you don't have to try and prise a smoke alarm open as part of the
visit. Keeps going bip, bip. I'm tempted to take a cricket bat to it tomorrow. I'm serious.
I did once smash, in my previous flat where I rented, what I used to refer to as my rented hovel once upon a time, it had a 14-foot high front room ceiling because it was in a converted sort of Edwardian era building. And there was a smoke alarm that had been left there by the previous occupant and landlord. Mm. And of course, 14-foot high, when the battery went and it beeped and beeped and beeped, we couldn't get up there. We couldn't fix it. No one was tall enough. No stepladder was tall enough. And in the end, unfortunately, myself and my mother took a pinata approach to it and both smacked it with brooms. Yeah. And eventually we did smash it off. Well, we smashed most of it off the ceiling. It stopped beeping, but it did mean that 30% of a smoke alarm was left on the ceiling. I have to say, given that my central heating broke for an entire year once, I wasn't moved to put it on the inventory when I left.
Well, there's a whole Curb Your Enthusiasm episode dedicated to this topic, and I really feel at the moment that I'm living that.
You're never that far away from Curb Your Enthusiasm anyway,
true.
Frankly. But so this is just yet more evidence. And I've never seen you and Larry David in the same room.
It drives you mad, though, doesn't it? It's just this kind of randomness of the bip, bip.
Exactly. There's no one rhythm to it. Or sometimes it will stop. For enough of a time, it's almost like having noisy neighbours. It stops for a bit and you're lulled into a false sense of security, and then it starts again.
Oh. Often at 4 o'clock in the morning, but as I say, it's going to get a cricket bat at it tomorrow. And the other part of the difficult week, Mrs. May and Boris Johnson, they keep making inflammatory statements about Brexit. They sort of fantasise that it's 1875 and Britain, you know, we've still got an empire stretching across the world. And because of this, I'm really genuinely weary of news, and I'm actively avoiding news bulletins. What I'm doing at the moment is I glance at the BBC website now and then to ensure that, you know, Mr. Trump hasn't declared war on the entire world or whatever. But otherwise, I'm finding the whole thing exhausting. Is this an age thing, Jules, or is it just me?
I don't think it's just you, and I don't think it's an age thing. I think it's many of us at the moment. My mother is the same. I'm quite often the same. Stephen Bush of the New Statesman recommends that if you're cross with Radio 4 today, you just go on to Radio 3 instead, listen to some nice Copeland and music in the mornings. There's a sort of a cartoon from one of the papers, I think, that gets shared around Facebook a lot at the moment. It's often appearing in my feed, and it has two people talking, and one of them says something on the lines of, "My desire to be well-informed is presently at odds of my desire to remain sane." And I think that's how a lot of us feel at the moment. But the thing is that I find myself increasingly flicking off today, you know, trying not, because I'm aware that when I follow things, I watched Theresa May's speech and it just made me angry and didn't result in good feelings. Yeah, as regular listeners will know, my relationship with the Labour Party is increasingly fraught, and after suggestions today that Jeremy Corbyn is going to impose a three-line whip on his party for them to vote Brexit. This, by the way, from the man that breached the three-line whip 428 times. I think I'll be honest and say on this podcast that today is the first time I've genuinely considered leaving the Labour Party. Yeah, I've borne a lot, but I don't I just don't know what to do anymore. So in a way, I want to avoid news as far as possible because it's just making me sad. But then part of me thinks that I do believe that Mr. Trump coming in America is not just someone that's completely incapable, but someone who's potentially very dangerous as well. And, you know, I know that I dislike Theresa May and Boris Johnson's constant invocation, well, particularly Boris Johnson's constantly invoking the Second World War. And it's interesting how strong Brexiteers, that seems to be their entire vocabulary, doesn't it? This kind of Second World War thing. You feel like, say, well, obviously you weren't around during the Second World War because people like my grandparents that were bombed out during the Blitz in East London, you know, West London, you know, I don't think they want to, they wouldn't look back on the war with fondness, I don't think. They'd look back on it with a great deal of upset. So, but part of me thinks if we really are wandering towards war again, which, you know, the world situation is fraught, isn't it, frankly? Part of me thinks I have to try and find a way of not closing my eyes through this. I have to try and find a way of not sleepwalking into this. So part of me thinks, yes, I completely agree, listening to the news is a miserable experience at the moment. But part of me as well thinks, well, the problem is, the danger is that, you know, these terrible, dangerous people in America and Russia and in other places rely on good people like us switching our eyes and ears off and allowing them to get on with it, really. So I think my view is that I don't like following the news, but I'm going to try and do it as far, you know, as much as I can bear it at the moment, because I don't want us to sleepwalk into disaster.
Yeah, you know, mentioning America, we do seem to follow the USA in so many ways. It's real old cliche, when America catches a cold, Britain sneezes, you know.
Absolutely,
we do seem to echo America. Political discussion now, and you know, you mentioned it with Mr. Corbyn bringing in his three-line whip.
We don't know if it's going to or not, no. but this is the suggestion anyway.
This sort of kind of open discussion seems to be lost now. On the one hand, you have right-wing people being all triumphant and kind of F you on social media, and there's no middle ground. Because then you find the left-leaning people in despair saying, well, this is not in my name. And back over here in the UK, I've given up, I know this is a small example, but I think it kind of highlights the problem. I've given up watching Question Time on BBC television, as it's more of that sort of aggressive...
Oh, it's terrible. It's just shouty nonsense most of the time, really. And the people that are booked to go on it now seem to get worse and worse and worse because we have political parties that are extreme now. And I do believe that the two centre parties are not central at all, actually. They're really wild, aren't they? And you know, it's in the past, for example, you'd have, you know, people like Nicky Morgan, perhaps, or Chuka Umna, Umuna for Labour, or people that, you know, came from sort of, you know, the centre. And now you have, you know, sort of wildly, you know, sort of out there people. I hate the fact that Nigel Farage is constantly appearing on Question Time with no reason at all now. Although, having said that, I think I read something recently that he wasn't the most appeared person on Question Time. Apparently, Caroline Flint is, point where she was nicknamed Labour's Minister for Question Time at one point because she always used to go on. So yes, I agree with you. It is, we seem to be living through, well, I keep using the word wild, but it does feel like wild times at the moment. But part of me thinks this is the time at which we ought to be paying more attention rather than less, I think, no matter how difficult it is. People, I think there are certain people that want us not to pay attention at the moment, and I don't want to give in to that.
It's just that nobody ever says now something like, I see what you mean, I need to think about that, you make a fair
absolutely,
point.
Yeah.
Nobody does that anymore. It's all kind of monochrome shouting, it's all heat, and you know, nobody actually listens. Everybody just wants to yell their point of view and the loudest voice.
But then having said that, though, I mean, people like Yvette Cooper often get, I use her as a case in point because I am, you know, a big fan of Yvette Cooper and have been for donkey's years, but even I have caught myself telling the joke about Yvette that goes around Labour Party circle sometimes, which is if Yvette walked into a room, you went, oh, hello Yvette, would you like a cup of tea? She'd or coffee, what would you like? And she'd go, I'd really like a cup of coffee, but we must remain open to the benefits of tea. And people, you know, obviously tease her for that. But having said that, you know, part of me, like you say, thinks, well, you know, the Blairite people used to, not that Yvette Cooper is a Blairite particularly, but the people from that era, the 97-2010 era, were often told off for being, you know, spun, there was, you know, people didn't want to commit to things and all that kind of stuff. And part of me thinks, well, maybe maybe it would be nice if people were, you know, more open to both sides of view, like you say, really. But it's funny how, you know, the people that were criticising Labour for that in the past are now the people that I think are pretty terrified at what's going to happen next.
Yeah, I don't think it necessarily means that, you know, one's being bland or the merits of this and that, or I can't decide. I think just listening to the other point of view and then forming your own opinion based on everything you've heard is perfectly... That's common sense, being an adult.
Absolutely, it's being a grown-up, I agree.
Do you want to watch some football? The Premier League, perhaps? Then you'd better move to China, matey, because...
I hear what you mean, and I'm just going online now to do my visa.
That's next, right after this, from a band who tomorrow night are playing the Brew Bar in Cork in the southwest of Ireland.
of course, we should all now book our visas to China en route from Ireland, I should think, because I would like to go and see them very much. They're called the Underscore Orchestra, and we're spelling orchestra in a slightly odd way if you want to Google this. It's O-R-K-E-S-T-R-A, and it's called Devil with the Devil. The reason why I've picked that is that it's the instrumental part of it forms the theme to the New Statesman podcast.
Oh.
And I am a fan of that podcast, the main one hosted by Stephen Bush and Helen Lewis. And as I was listening to it, they always say at the beginning, theme music is this, licensed under commercial Creative Commons. And I always think, I'm going to go and have a look and try and listen to that. And I didn't realise, of course, because they never play the vocal sections. Mm. They only play the instrumental bit at the beginning. So it became as a genuine surprise to me when I was listening to it 2.5 minutes in, that woman piped up and started singing with that man. I didn't know what was happening there. You see, there's me thinking I was enjoying one of my much loved instrumentals, and the Revenge of Terence popped up and it was people singing. So it's something that can please both me and Terence.
They're from Portland, Oregon, but they seem to spend I did a bit of research because I hadn't heard of them before. I did a bit of research, and they seem to spend an inordinate amount of time touring Ireland. So good. Good for them, is what they're saying. Jules, if I happen to be working at the unlikely though this may be, at the deli counter in Tesco on 400 quid a week.
Well, I suspect you'd be a natural, but carry on.
And Asda called me one day and said, we'll pay you £500,000 a week to come and work at our deli counter. No one would be surprised if I gave serious consideration to their offer, perhaps even mentioned to Tesco that I was musing over a move to Asda. So why, Jules, should we be surprised when a footballer who's only come to play football in England because he was offered an enormous sum of money, why would we be surprised that he wants to play football for someone else who has offered him an even more gigantic pile of cash?
Well, yes, indeed. Can I take issue with your metaphor, first up? Your metaphor would be better if you were working at Tesco for £400 a week and then Asda came in and offered you £800 a week. That would be a more realistic metaphor, because if you think about people going over to China, they are offered an awful lot more money, but they're not offered 10 times the salaries they're on, are they?
I may have been exaggerating to make my point, but I may have gone a little too far there.
I just want to make sure that your metaphor is fit for purpose. And I think that essentially it is. I just think it needs fine-tuning. Anyway, so we move on. Well, the problem is, since football became about money, you know, that's where we are now, isn't it? It's not like we can turn the clock back. I mean, unfortunately, you could argue. I mean, I think it's terrible the way that money is just dictates everything in football now, and I've almost turning into my dad in my levels of depression about it. But I think that you almost feel like saying to fans, you know, well, if you want to go and watch the best players, in a way, by buying tickets, by buying satellite subscriptions, by buying replica kits, by going along with this and going and having Costa or what was the other, Drogba stuck on your back or that sort of thing, in a way, you know, you're sort of complicit in this. And can you really complain when players turn out they want even more money? Because, you know, let's face it, you've all kind of encouraged it, really. That's kind of how I feel a little bit about it. I mean, I think that ultimately, you know, players will make the decisions that they will. But I think when it comes down to it, we'll turn round to bite them on the thing eventually. Because look at David Beckham, who actually I have a lot of time for. Mm-hmm. He went to America, didn't he, on that ridiculous salary. I mean, that almost did fit with your metaphor, actually. The 128 million, you know, a year or whatever it was. That actually did fit your Tesco as the thing. And yet, I remember it caused him problems, because the standard of football in America at that time, and I suspect it still now to some extent, was not great. They played out of season. The season was a different season, I think, to over here, and it was a much shorter season. And basically, David Beckham then struggled to get in and then stay in the England side because the standard of football he was playing was nowhere near enough. And I wonder if, when these players all pop off to China and they have different arrangements over there, whether they will then end up realizing that it's a problem. It's interesting. I have a slightly more, it's slightly easier to accept, I think, if players at the end of their careers go off for a big payday. So perhaps Frank Lampard going off to America, you know, coming to the end of his Chelsea and then Manchester City career. But then, having said that, ultimately, I suppose, how much money does one person need, really? I mean, it's you almost feel like saying, well, surely haven't you got enough money already? I mean, I don't know. I mean, I remember seeing an interview with Lady Gaga once, and I remember watching it with my, I think it was around my mum's house, I was watching it, and she was always very dismissive of Lady Gaga and said, oh, for God's sake, what is she doing on stage wearing bacon again, you know, or whatever it was that she did. And they interviewed her. And weirdly, Lady Gaga comes across as a very down-to-earth person, away from her kind of persona. Joanne, I think, is her real name. And Joanne comes across as a really... Oh, that smoke alarm is winding me up now. Joanne's
sorry, you can hear it. I didn't realise it was really... invading right as far as this.
Don't listen to it with headphones, people, or we'll all end up taking a day trip up to Berkshire. Anyway, so Lady Gaga was interviewed, and she said, you know, they talked about things. She seemed very down to earth, and she said, oh, well, I was offered this ad campaign and that campaign, but I decided not to go with it because, you know, I've made a lot of money at musical radio. How much money does one person really need? And I thought, isn't it refreshing to hear somebody say that? Someone that I know, you might say, well, she's got a lot of money already, but it's not. I'm reassured that some people have a cut-off point, I think, really. And I think that's where... You know, all of us that watch football and pay, you know, for the to go and watch football and around it have created this situation. And I suppose, you know, we've created this point where if the rewards are out there, then people are going to go for them, aren't they?
Well, I think we're all kind of to blame in a way. I'm talking about people who go to football matches to support the team. We're all in denial, and I'm one of them, because we all have to pretend that the manager and the players, when we go to the game, everyone's... the manager, the players genuinely care and have an affinity with the team.
The culture of badge kissing.
All of that stuff. You know, but the reality is, of course, the number of players who stay with one club through their career is absolutely tiny. And examples like Steven Gerrard and John Terry are increasingly impossible to find. And I think it's daft. You know, it struck me in the last week or so how daft it is that clubs still make this big deal about players tying themselves to a club. And I'll give you the example. Tottenham Hotspur specialists in this. You get a photo of Harry Kane and Mauricio Pochettino grinning as Kane signs a new 5-year contract, and it's all good. Oh, look, he's committed himself to the club. And I'm not talking about him in particular, but we all know that if a Chinese team offered Spurs, in my example, 150 million quid for Harry Kane, he'd be gone tomorrow. Spurs would offload him tomorrow, so that 5-year contract would be meaningless. And overall, the power, as Diego Costa and Dimitri Payet of West Ham have proven in the last week, the power is increasingly moving towards the elite players.
Yes,
and
I
think it's not too great a leap of the imagination to see a situation where players refuse to commit to these contracts and to a team for, say, more than, at most, maybe 6 months. So that if, for example... Chelsea aren't top of the league in January, someone like Diego Costa could just say, right, I'm off to Man United or Paris Saint-Germain or more likely Beijing or Shanghai, and then 6 months later he could move on again, you know, like a mercenary, or, as I was thinking this afternoon, like Clint Eastwood in High Plains Drifter.
Absolutely. And then, of course, people will wonder why their teams that house these players don't do well and kind of collapse. Because there is no team, is there, really? There's no cohesion. There's no sort of kind of spirit in things. You know, there's no one's committed, are they, really? And mentally as well as physically. Why would you commit to a job? I mean, it happens in my profession. Obviously, unfortunately, us conveyancers don't get paid millions of pounds, which is an oversight, I feel. But occasionally you get... I locumed for a bit, but when I met other locums who locumed professionally and really did locum for years on end, occasionally, you know, you get locums that were rubbish at what they did because they probably were good lawyers, but they were just a bit lazy, because if you were booked on a 2-week contract, you'd work there for a couple of weeks and then you'd go again. It was a bit like supply teaching, really, and there would be no, you know, that you'd have no incentive apart from the money you were being paid, which is actually, if you're a locum, you get paid better than if you're permanently, because you get paid an hourly rate. And, you know, the hourly rates are, you know, sort of, in some cases, several hundred pounds. And, you know, and there is no incentive, because you know that you're going to get paid a lot of money, probably more than you would do if you were actually working there. And you just drift in and drift out again. Having seen, not myself, having seen some people do that, it doesn't fill me with confidence if football adopted that same thing, because football is really built around gamble. It's a team game, isn't it? It's a team sport in the genuine sense of the word. So, oh, by the way, the Dimitri Payet saga at West Ham, very much amused by someone tweeting during the week, it's a good job West Ham didn't do anything stupid like build in a massive permanent Dimitri Payet banner in their new stadium. Yeah. Oh, wait, and it's this enormous picture of Dimitri Payet, which looks like it could be very difficult to, it would have to be resprayed, I think, at the very least. And so that's built into the Olympic Stadium, which shows the folly of that thing altogether. We've talked about it previously, haven't we? What an enormous folly it is. So, yes, just when you think it couldn't get any worse and it cost you loads and loads of money to take plastic seating out every 4 weeks, why not spend some money respraying your star player that's beggared off?
They had to put a couple of security guards outside that piece of art last weekend.
Oh, dear. We're putting art in heavily inverted commas, yes. I assume.
I went to see La La Land on Tuesday, an enjoyable movie, but I found actually going to the cinema to be rather soulless and a minor ordeal. Are we falling out of love with the cinema? That's next after Prince.
Hey, girl. I bet you didn't know I had both eyes on you. It's true. I've seen all those other guys too. Maybe frankly, I don't give a damn.
Many guys have come to you with a line that wasn't true.
still it still jars, doesn't it, to remember he's no longer with us.
It really does.
Yeah, Prince and la 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 means I love you.
Oh, that's really nice. That's a nice version. You should consider elongating that. Prince, or as I like to call him, to wind up a friend of mine, P-Rince. So Mr. P-Rince. I'm a fan of putting it P-Rince. I get this from my... It's such a dad joke. I get this from my parents who mangle the names of bands deliberately. So my dad always... we had Mary J. Bilge for a while, Baldy Drawn Boy. They were also popular. My mum used to call Travis Tarvis deliberately to wind people up when they came, my friends essentially, when they came, who would always take it at face value. Going into the film industry, George C. Looney is also a popular star at my parents' house. So thank you for treating us to some P-Rince in amongst your malfunctioning smoke alarm.
Oh, I know, hopefully by next week, well, it'll either be fixed by a professional or, as I say, I'll have taken a heavy implement. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. One quick internet search, and on Tuesday I could have watched an unofficial copy of La La Land at home, feet up on the sofa, the ability to pause it at any time I wanted, and perhaps with the heating turned on. And believe me, that bit is crucial to my story, because instead... On Tuesday, accompanied by a woman, no less, I paid...
This is what we need to speak about, but anyway, we'll talk about this after the podcast is finished.
I paid to park in a bleak car park, and then I paid 30...
Well, you know how to show a lady a good time, Terence.
Absolutely, yeah. And then I paid 30 quid for two seats in a freezing cold. 30 quid, I know the word. Yeah, this...
You used to be able to buy a house for that.
Welcome to the home counties. Screening room 9, which was maybe 10% full. And I enjoyed La La Land. No spoilers, of course, but it's everything they say. Easy to like, no violence, no aliens, no robocops. And some lovely location shots around Los Angeles, where Wilshire Boulevard, Fair Oak, particularly Griffith Park, never looked more bewitching. But I kept thinking, I wish I was watching this at home. There were people coughing, munching popcorn, and, you know, just being people. And, you know, I just don't like that whole people thing. And as I say, the whole thing cost about 35 quid with the parking and all. And that, no food or drink. That was just parking and the cinema tickets. The cinema was like a cathedral without a soul. There were maybe two staff on duty, one selling expensive popcorn and hot dogs, another checking tickets. And the worst thing of all, the cinema's temperature felt colder than the temperature outside. Now, you're a young person, Jules. I've heard about you.
I like how I'm always categorised as this show's token young person when I am nothing of the sort. Thank you for putting me in that brand.
Well, I've heard of you relatively young people. I've heard about you. Do you still enjoy the adventure of a night out at the movies?
Well, I have a cinema. So there are cinema-wise in Hastings, we have the Odeon in the town centre, which is extortionately expensive. It only has four screens, and the films that I want to watch, i.e. not enormous blockbusters, are shown about once a week in the smallest screen ever, frankly, which you know, you I've met many people's knees over the years in that cinema. It's not very large. There's also, interestingly, my cinema-going experience has been heightened by the fact there is now a cinema... an art cinema, a Kino. This is a brand that's used at small cinemas across the country. There's something called the Kino Theatre, which is run by Russian people, a nice Russian couple, down the road. It's 5 minutes down the road from me, and I can walk down from my flat, go in, buy a drink or a cocktail at the bar beforehand, and then go and watch a film in a soft chair, because it doesn't just have cinema seating. It also has armchairs and random seating in it. There's also an excellent arts house cinema in Hastings Old Town called the Electric Palace. So actually, I don't enjoy the multiplex experience, but I do quite enjoy... Yes, and whereas, well, the fact that you have 9 screening rooms suggests it is a multiplex, so, or a hospital. But the small art house experience. I recently, when I spoke about going to see Gone with the Wind in a previous podcast, at the Electric Palace, and I have to say, a small cinema. I mean, I saw Pulp Fiction, having never seen it before. They just randomly showed it last year at the Kino, and I enjoyed it. But so the small arts house cinema experience. There's a similar one in Rye and one in Hawkhurst, which are towns near nearest to where I live. So I enjoy the small arts house experience. I have two contrasting stories about the multiplex experience, one which chimes with you and one which actually added to my enjoyment of the film unexpectedly. So the unpleasant experience, I went to see War of the Worlds, the Tom Cruise ill-advised remake a few years ago, which, if you think Question Time is shouty, you ought to watch that, frankly. It's the loudest, most pointless film I've ever seen. It's almost as bad as when we went to see The Da Vinci Code. But the only thing that made this slightly, or rather the thing that happened that summed up my abject misery at having paid money to watch this film, War of the Worlds, was when one of the 13-year-old boys in front of us blew up a prophylactic and put it on his head.
Oh,
I mean, that made me think, oh, who am I and what am I doing with my life? On the plus side, some years before that, so this would have been, I don't know, mid-2000s, I went away to Derby and I went to see a friend of mine who suggested we went to the cinema in the evening. We went to see one of the Pirates of the Caribbean films. I think it was the second one. It was extremely long. And to the opposite of your experience, because it was the summer, the cinema was beltingly hot. I mean, like, sort of, there was a man in Hawaiian shorts that walked in front of me, and he was not out of place temperature-wise. It was really terrible. So I nearly fell asleep before the film started and had to be thumped awake rather unceremoniously by the person the other side of me. And they had those adverts that they have on at the beginning of the cinema, and you think, oh, you know, goodness, I don't want to see this film with cartoon rhinos in it, you know, all that kind of stuff, nor do I want to buy some chocolate. But I had this drink driving advert on, you know, those anti-drink driving commercials, and this one, it was a summertime one, so it wasn't a Christmas one, and it was in a bar, and it had two women standing at the bar and two men, and one of the men says to the other man that's sitting down, oh, you should go and buy them a drink, get us all a drink. And the guy goes, no, I can't, I've had one already. And this man encourages this other man to walk over towards the women, both of whom are quite picturesque, as you can imagine. And so he walks over to this blonde woman, and then as he walks towards her, he is thrown into the air, and the whole scene is simulated as if it's a car accident in the pub, and, you know, she ends up bleeding on the floor, and it's really loud, and there's the sound of smashing metal even though there aren't any cars there, and it is genuinely really quite shocking. And we all sat there in stunned silence except a man three rows behind us who leant over and said, I think he thought he was being quieter than he was, said to his wife, well, she shouldn't have worn them shoes for a start, as this woman lay on the floor in high heels. And I did not hear any of the next three adverts because the cinema was basically rioting because it was so entertaining. It just hit that kind of that point. So actually, in a way, I was glad I was in the cinema to experience that moment of joy. That wouldn't have happened in my house, I don't think. So actually, in a way, the communal experience at the cinema can be very frustrating sometimes, but it can also have moments of joy. Also, I went to see Children of Men at the cinema when it came out, this kind of apocalyptic type film, and curiously, it is set in the southeast of England, the next town along from where I live, where I now work, which is I talk about the Dead of War Pavilion sometimes. Bexhill. As I nickname it, the People's Republic of Bexhill, also known locally as God's Waiting Room because its population is rather elderly. But so we went to see Children of Men in Hastings, and they make reference to Bexhill-on-Sea and the fact that Bexhill contains this kind of a sort of asylum seekers holding pen that they're desperate to try and get into. And one of the characters says, we must go to Bexhill, and someone shouted, you what, mate, from the crowd. And of course everyone was very, very entertained by this. So in a way, I have experienced moments of great communal joy in the cinema, but equally, young men putting things on their heads doesn't fill me with a great deal of enjoyment. And it has to be said, I resent paying so much money for the experience. The advantage of going to art house cinemas is they are not quite as expensive. I think it's about £7 or £8 to go to the cinema, and a little bit less, I think, to go to the Palace. It's about £7. And actually, I think that's about right, really. I expect, you know, if they're going to the trouble of putting films, particularly if they're putting unusual films on, I'm happy to pay a bit of money and, you know, obviously pay for a drink and that sort of thing. That's fine. But no, it's the idea. I mean, we went to see one of the Batman films some years ago now, and it was at the Tunbridge Wells Odeon. And, you know, I paid about 12 quid to sit in the seat and watch a fairly average film. And you know, like you say, when you've got the masses, the unwashed masses around you as well, I can kind of see why people do get tempted to sit at home. Although, having said that, I do enjoy the interjections of the local cinema crowds. Maybe that's just because Sussex is a hip and happening place. Who knows?
Maybe. It just all feels like a kind of outdated concept to me. To my parents' generation, more or less before everyone had a TV, it was an escape.
Absolutely. And there were so many cinemas everywhere. Oh, yes. There were tons.
There were three or four in my parents' hometown alone. Nobody had a TV then. It was an escape from post-war Britain, as I say, and it was a chance to get away from what I suppose was rather a grey world. But now, when we live in an era where we can all have enormous televisions at home, and that is within the reach of most people, you can get them for a couple of hundred quid now and have an enormous TV, and we can watch movies in colour, high definition, in comfort, with our own choice of companions and not young men with trying to put things over
their
heads.
Absolutely.
And of
yes.
course, crucially, the heating at whatever level we choose.
Yes, indeed.
Staying home wins for me every time.
Yes, I suppose this is reflective of our personalities, really, that you would much rather stay at home at all costs, whereas I am more open to ideas of the communal experience.
Yeah, but, you've got to meet... There's people out there, Juliet, that's the thing.
I know, I find that less of an issue than you do, I'm afraid.
Now, Juliet...
I'll learn over time.
Maybe. Now, Juliet, Lucy, many people don't like to make arrangements for their week ahead before knowing of your engagements. So,
you are basically just trolling me now, aren't you? That's fine.
Well, can you enlighten us and reveal the contents of your entertainment-based diary for the next week, please?
Well, I can. Well, we're recording this on Thursday, the 19th of January. On Friday, the 20th of January, I will be playing records with my friend Tim that runs Wow and Flutter Record Shop at the Printworks in Hastings, as we build as Wow and Flutter with special guest Juliet Harris. It's nice to be special. And we're doing soul disco in the beat and synth pop. So 8 until 1 at the Hastings Printworks. I shall be not doing Saturday Social this week because I did it last week. I will be next Wednesday, so that's Wednesday the 25th, I'll be returning with Indie Wonderland on Barricade Radio from 8 until 10, barricaderadio.com.
Excellent. A huge thanks, of course, to our very own Flora Post, executive producer Rona, and what's this we're playing out with here, Juliet?
Yes, and speaking of people trolling other people, I thought that after your you know, slandering...
My diatribe.
After your, you know, needlessly spiteful behaviour towards instrumentals last week, I thought I'd teach you a lesson. Now, actually, I've tried to play an instrumental that I thought you might actually quite like. That wasn't of the Herb Alpert, you know, Lambdorama type thing, which seems to rouse not just you, but listeners that often tweet with their irritation at it. And who can blame them, frankly? So I thought I'd pick this. Because I enjoy the fact that Primal Scream, this is from the Primal Scream's album Exterminator, they removed all the vowels from their marketing then, so they actually technically become Primal Scrum with Exterminator. So this, technically, I can do the vowel-less version and the vowel version, but this is Blood Money, or if you want to call it properly, it's Blood Money.
You have been listening to a DACA Media production.